Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, we are within 24 hours of the kickoff of the NFL draft, although everybody listening, it'll be much, much sooner than that. Mm-hmm. I know this is your Christmas, if you would. Your at least football Christmas. I don't know. I put your actual Christmas more like Christmas, but. It's your football Christmas. You're probably your favorite part of the football calendar year. Are you ready?
Well, you know, I'm still pushing through to absorb as much information as I can. So I want to say I'm like 99% ready, right? I'm still trying to add those last little bits. I'm still trying to do everything I can, trying to weed through all the disinformation. But yeah, you know, like, I feel a lot more prepared this year than I did last year when, because we got such a late start because of the, you know, GM and coaching changes and whatnot, but more information because you know, the COVID situation has changed from a year ago. And so, yeah, it's really exciting that it's going to be going down here in, you know, pretty soon.
All right. We went full mailbag this week. You know, we let our listeners do all the work for us. And no, just kidding. But we're really, it's awesome that we get so many questions, except for it puts us into a situation where we are in full lightning round mode.
Right.
Like this, that's how we're going to have to go through this. And we'll get through as many as we can. If we can't get to yours and you're listening for it, we apologize and try again next time, because we will be doing this, you know, as you all know from listening, we do this a lot. No, not a lot, but we do it and we try to get to everybody's question. All right. So let's start with keen observations. Do you think this draft class lacks the quote unquote sure thing type players because COVID robbed a lot of them of two off seasons and half a season of development? There seems to be a lot of great athletes with upside, but not many polished complete prospects.
I do think the COVID situation played into the development of some of these players, and the NCAA tried to offset that with, you know, the extra year of eligibility. But at the same time, you know, there's value into coming out of college when you're still young, right? And so a lot of the players are still opting to leave early. And so they do lack some of the polish that, you know, we might have seen in previous draft classes. We do have a handful of like fifth and sixth year seniors in this draft class, which is really interesting, where they're entering the league at like 25 years old. And so like that makes their evaluation really interesting. But at the same time, yeah, I don't know if the COVID thing is completely responsible. I think it just happens to be the way things have fallen this year. And if the quarterback class was a little bit more shored up, I think we might have a different perspective on this class in general, because a lot of the edge, the OTs, like there's still really talented players in this class.
Yeah. If you think about last year's draft class, you know, those guys were robbed a year, and that'll, as of right now, and it looks like it'll continue that way, it's going to be considered to be one of the strongest draft classes of all time.
Yeah.
So, and I guess time will tell with this one too. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's hit the next question from Craig Gallagher. Mm-hmm. Here's one for you and Joe both. So ask to Eric in the Twitter format. We hear a lot from beat writers about which picks would make fans go crazy. For example, Sauce or Willis. But isn't it true that Brad Holmes should give not a single damn what the fan reaction to a pick would be if he's confident with his evaluation?
Yeah, I don't think he'll care what the fans think. I think he will have his guy and he will know how to sell it. And it doesn't matter what position it is, or you know, if it's a corner or a quarterback or a safety, I mean, it doesn't matter. I think the only hard challenging sell would be if it was like an offensive lineman, and there's talented offensive linemen at the top, but I think, yeah, if it's anything other than an offensive lineman, I think you can sell it to the fans pretty easily.
All right. Jason Krulik asks, what is your confidence level? Oh, wait, I
think
Craig was asking for
too.
Both. Yeah. Yeah. Right. So he shouldn't in a perfect world, in a vacuum. Yeah. He shouldn't care. I do agree with that, but, at the same time, like, these fans get their pitchforks out at a certain point.
Yeah.
And, you know, how quickly do you want that to happen? Because I like, you know, Quinn and Patricia are a bad example because they were terrible. I don't think there's much they could have done to save their jobs. Right. But like, they have to actually, they didn't even do that. They didn't care because they made decisions based off of trying to get to the playoffs. Right. But I don't know. Like, I think the pressure starts to mount a little bit more if you start doing things wacky and doing them on a regular basis. So they do have to care a little bit. But yeah, ultimately, if this is your football team and you're building it your way, you shouldn't care.
Based on the comments that I've seen, there's like five or six different camps where people have really just hunkered down on one guy. And if, you know, Holmes isn't going to get five or six of those guys, he's going to get one. And so you're going to have like 60% of your fan base, it seems like, is going to be really mad with the pick, no matter who it is, even if it's, you know, the best guy that you know, is on the board.
All right. Jason Krulik's question. What is your confidence level of Brad Holmes going into this draft?
Well, for me, I feel fine with him. I think, you know, he's shown the ability to add players. You know, there's always going to be questions around certain guys, and you don't ever get a really true sense of a draft class, you know, until a couple of years down the road. But, you know, outside of Levi, I think that the class did pretty much what I expected, maybe even a little bit better. And then when you add the UDFAs in, I feel pretty confident that this is his time to shine. How do you feel about Brad here?
Well, I want to give him a confidence level of incomplete. We've had 1 year, and yes, like, and I agree. Like, it was I would say successful first draft class. Yeah. 1 year's of evaluation worth, but you know, you come away with, you know, two strong starters in Penei Sewell and
Amon-Ra
St. Brown, and like, and with Sewell having the potential being of an all pro player eventually. So I would feel okay about him, but once again, it's just 1 year, so I'm not super confident yet. Let's see if he seems to repeat last year. Well, then we'll be confident going into year three.
Yeah, and I think we need to remember that when the Lions walked away from the draft initially, the confidence level wasn't even that high, you know, because,
well, he leaves the new guy and we're
terrible. Yeah. And I think people there were questions like, why did he double dip at defensive tackle? Was Melifonu the right pick in the third round, or could they have gone after somebody better? And so there were a few questions, you know, everyone wanted them to draft receiver because they're like, nobody, you can't find a guy on day three. And then I'll, you know, I mean, so I think even immediately after the draft is done, there needs to be, you know, a sense of pause amongst Lions fans here.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen.
No, I mean,
it's okay for people to get excited or angry. I don't know. It's just the way it's always been. You know, it's just, you know, there's just a more, it's, you hear about it more. It's not just that your friends at school or at work that you guys are just talking about, and you kind of always know what one of them, you know, one of them's thinking. Now you get, you know, hundreds of different opinions if you want them, you know. And it's just a different world in that respect. All right, draft strategy. Chris Robbins asks, how influential do you think best player available is going to be? If this staff had Evan Neal in the top tier alone with Hutch with a perfect grade, do you think the staff would take him despite the rightful love for Deckard and Sewell?
I think with best player available, it always comes with an asterisk, right? You can't just take the highest graded player. You have to take in you know, so many other factors that go in. If you have two guys that you're sold on and you believe that they're going to be part of your franchise for multiple years, and you have another player who's, while maybe not in that same tier, is close enough at a glaring position of need, I think maybe, you know, that's why teams trade out, right? That's why teams trade out of a spot. Or I don't think you can just blindly take the next guy on the board. And that's how they, I mean, that's the way they set their boards up as well. Like, they're going to say, yeah, this guy has a lower grade, but he's at a higher position of need. Therefore, his value goes up a little bit for us. And then they're going to stack him above Evan Neal. So I don't think, and while Evan Neal's grade may be higher, I don't think he's necessarily going to be stacked on the board higher, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? So there, you always have to take need into account. You just can't draft based solely on need, where you're reaching for players. If it's close, you know, there's intangibles and needs and things that go into it that really weigh the difference between player A and player B.
With the way they're talking about, you know, the top, I don't know, six or seven guys in the draft, maybe even stretches to nine. I don't see a certain organization really having one of those guys rated that highly above. Now, if you go on like a 100-point scale of how you're grading prospects, right? Sure. And if you have Neal as a 99, and then the next guy, like you have Kayvon Thibodeau as like a 76, well, then you're going to take Neal. But I don't see any, except for if you held Neal in that high of regard, there's got to be another franchise or two that agrees with you. Right. And that's who you'd want to trade with if that was their need, except for I don't think anybody's thinking that way. And so that's where it plays in. It's like, yeah, they should draft an offensive lineman if they feel he's that much better than anything else they could take at that position and can't get rid of the pick.
There was a national analyst over the weekend that said Malik Willis is a generational quarterback, and if the Lions passed on them, they would be the dumbest franchise in the league.
Well, that's not saying much, because they already kind of are.
No, but here's the deal.
That they already are.
But here's the deal. If there was a generational talent at any position in this draft, wouldn't somebody trade up to get him?
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. 100%.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, people would be clamoring for it.
Like, that's the thing. Like, with this word generational, and like these words are getting thrown around by like these, by people that are like overreaching to try and sell their player. And it's really silly at this point.
Well, yeah, but that's, they've got their lotto ticket now, right? And it's not even really like a lotto ticket, because, you know, everybody could talk about, you know, Bill Belichick was such a genius for drafting Tom Brady 199th overall. It's like, well, he also passed on him in five rounds, or however many draftings it was. And they must have liked him, right? They obviously they drafted him, so obviously they liked him. And, you know, a lot of other teams could have agreed with them. It's like, we like Tom Brady. We'll take him in this, you know, we'll take a look at it, taking him in the seventh round. It's just, and every now and again, you know, Tom Brady, it's even more often than every now and again, these guys are right. And these guys end up being a great player or whatever. But that doesn't make, like, especially like a writer that's making this comment. It's like, he's no genius. Like, he just made like this wild comment. And
he doubled
works
down
out
on
for him. But why not?
It was
because who's going to talk about it later? And he can bring it up whenever he wants when he's right. If he's right, you know what I'm saying? It's very low risk.
I guess the point I'm coming back to with Chris's question is, if Neal was significantly better than anyone else, then somebody would trade up for him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I agree.
Right, and I think that's why they wouldn't take him, as opposed to one of the other like six guys that I think are in that top tier for them.
All right. Next question's from Derek. After edge and safety, it looks like the Lions offseason prepped them to take best player available in the draft. When is the pinnacle of the Holmes Campbell team? How does the timeline affect this draft?
So when is this going to be a complete team? I think we're at least a year or two away.
Well, you can't say, I don't think you really could say, it's got to be a year.
It's at least a year away. Okay.
A year, including the next draft.
Yes.
The next free agency and the next draft.
Correct.
But not 2022 season, it's the 2023 season where, well, they better be in business. You know, like they better be in the play. Not, I wouldn't even say playoff contender. They need to be a playoff team.
Right. Year. So how does, so if we agree that there are at least two drafts from being like competitive, how does that impact what they do now? Well, what it means is they need to get the best player that they can at every spot. They can't reach. And if it's possible and they trade down, it would be in their best interest to also try and acquire capital in next year's draft as well. So that's the strategy that I would have going in if I was Brad Holmes, would be, I want to get my best guy. And if I don't have a best guy and I can trade back and still get that guy, or, you know, if I can acquire more capital, I don't think they need more capital this year. I think eight picks is going to be fine for them. But if they can somehow like swing something for next year, I think that'd be in their best interest.
All right. Random CPA.
Hold on. I think Derek.
Yeah. Sorry. Derek's got a part two. Will Brad Holmes be looking to patch eventual holes on the roster or add depth to already proven units?
So I do think he'll be able to patch holes, and I do think he will also add, right? Like, if the right position doesn't fall to him, I think there's value in adding to an already strong unit that maybe you're losing a player to an expiring contract sometime in the next 2 years as well, right? So a lot of that will be put into play, I think, in this draft, where it's still in the talent acquisition. It's still in building that base. They'll come out of this draft with almost half their roster in their first or second year, and then another draft to add to that. And that's really when I think they're going to start being able to, you know, take bigger steps forward next offseason.
All right. Random CPA asks, Hutchinson goes number one. Would you trade pick number two for 9 and 40? Is that enough compensation? Also, which pick is more likely to be dealt, 2 or 32?
So 9 and 40 on the trade charts says it's about 440. And so this is Rich Hill's trade chart. So 9 and 40 would be about, 540 points. The number two pick is worth 717. So no, that wouldn't be enough according to the trade charts. Second part of that question, which is more likely to be dealt, 2 or 32? I actually think 32 is more likely to be dealt.
The fifth year of control.
Right.
Teams will want the fifth year of control. Like, they'd want to get in on that last pick of the first round if they really like somebody. That's what everybody claims.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be surprised, because those picks at the bottom of the first round, we're not used to seeing it very often. Like, they often get dealt. Like, that's where usually a lot of the movement occurs. All right. Cornbread and Kool-Aid Pod asks, from a value of the asset standpoint, is there any player that makes more sense to draft versus trading at 32, depending on the quarterbacks available? Shouldn't trading out of 32 for a team wanting the fifth year on the quarterback be a no-brainer?
Yeah, I mean, that's the tricky part, is we don't know how much they value a certain player. Like, if the right player falls to them, they could absolutely say it's not worth it to trade out, or they might not have the right trade offer. Even if there's an offer on the table, it might not be the right one. It might take them out of range of a player that they want. Right. So I don't think it's a no brainer, but I do think it becomes very valuable, because like we just talked about, and as he points out, the fifth year option becomes very appealing to teams that are trying to jump back into the first round.
Dylan Gould. Oh, that's good. Dylan, I'm sorry. And Over the Blue Moon Fan asks similar questions. Most people think 32 is a good spot to trade down from, but do you think the Lions could potentially want to trade up from 34 a few spots to get three first rounders with fifth year options and get a guy like Hill or one of the wide receivers that will be gone by 32? Would it cost too much capital?
So to go up from 34 to something, or I think they could even go up from 32 somewhere as well. Again, this all happens if the right player falls to a spot, but there's talent. There's receivers, there's linebackers, if they are really in love with like Malik Willis and all of a sudden his stock tumbles, which I don't really see happening, but if it does, and he gets into the teens, I could see them trying to make a move if they really liked him that much. So how much would it cost is really, I mean, there's too much that goes into that to really put a value on that. It really depends on how far they're moving up and how much, you know, with a pick in next year, with two first rounders in next year's draft, it gives them the options to, you know, do a few things. And I don't, you know, they'd have to be it'd have to be the right guy, and they'd have to really think that this person is a difference maker on their franchise. And so I don't know. I could see them moving up. I just don't know if it, I don't know if it would be a quarterback. I think if it was a quarterback, they'd probably take that quarterback at two. Right. But I could see them if they're like, hey, Drake Jackson, you know, shouldn't be there, but he is. Drake London shouldn't be there, and he is, and he's, you know, fits exactly what we're looking for, and you know, let's go get him. But I could also see him just, I mean, look, if they sit back and they get a pick at 32 and then they pick again at 34 and they don't trade out of either of those spots, they're going to get two really good players. So I could see that being the strategy as well.
All right, Daniel Cornell asked, do you think pick 34 will be a pick that a lot of teams will want to trade for?
I don't think it'll be as appealing as 32, right? Because 32 has got that fifth year value. So, and after 32, I think Jacksonville's 33 becomes very popular because they want to have that first pick of the new day. So I don't think 34 is as appealing as 32 or 33.
All right, Stafford's – oh, wait, SMCJ asked, by packaging 32 and 34, how far could the Lions move if Devin Lloyd, Kyle Hamilton, or one of the top cornerbacks start to slide?
So if they were to try and move up, you're talking about 364 points or so, right? Maybe a little bit less. That moves them close to, like, the – top 10, like in the teens, even
between 10 and 11.
Yeah. Right. So
wild.
Yeah. So like they would, they could theoretically, yeah. So it'd be 359. So 359 would take them to pick 11,
Washington.
So would they trade that far up? I mean, look, if they were considering someone at two, and they were in that pack of six that they're talking about, like, let's say Kyle Hamilton, and then all of a sudden he's there at 11. I wouldn't rule it out. It would be aggressive, but it'd have to be a guy that you were like, I absolutely love this guy. And it was a guy I would have took it to, but I just didn't, you know, I just liked the other guy better. And, you know, you'd be willing to give up that much capital to go get him. But again, you'd probably have to add something else to go. But according to the trade chart, that's just how far you could go up.
Stafford's fifth child asks, do you see a world where the Lions go heavy offensively in the draft?
Well, I mean, I could, because of how the board falls in certain situations. But it would surprise me. Like if they took a quarterback at two, and then it just happens to be that, you know, a receiver that shouldn't be there is there, and they take them, you know, maybe they grab a defensive player, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, a tight end is there that we really love. And, you know, and that would be offensive heavy to me if the three of the first four picks were on offense. Right. So I don't think it will go that way. And most of the mock drafts that I've done, like whether it's through SB Nation or whether it's through Pride of Detroit, I mean, I'm almost going entirely defense, because I think you can wait on a lot of the offensive pieces to like the third round.
All right. Now we'll go into the offensive portion of our mailbag questions. Victor asks, what's the best predictor of NFL success for the future quarterback? Is there anything, traits or skills that correlate with success for a quarterback? And if so, which quarterback has shown those attributes?
I mean, is there? I mean, look, you can say
accuracy. Throwing the 15-yard out.
Yeah, look, there's things that you want, right? You want a big arm. You want some mobility. You want quick processing. But even when you have those things packaged together, it doesn't always work out. So unfortunately, there isn't a surefire thing that you look at a guy and you say, okay, he's going to be good. Like, I mean, maybe the only thing is like, consistently producing at these traits over multiple years, right? Like with Trevor Lawrence, right? Like you saw him put up consistently good numbers with consistently plus skills for three straight years before they were able to take him. That's hard to find. Because, I mean, look, everyone was in love with Tua, and then Tua has not done well in the NFL, right? Like, and then, like, Herbert, or he was looked like a dynamo, and then he buckled in his last year in college, and then at Oregon, and then all of a sudden he dropped, and then he's been great, right? And the same thing with, like, Josh Allen, when he was at Wyoming, he was this big, strong, had lots of traits, but he was wildly erratic, and it took him a couple years in the NFL before things clicked for him. So there are traits, but nothing is surefire, and we've seen that these guys can come from better. I mean, look, Texas Tech never produced a quarterback. The best Texas Tech quarterback was probably Cliff Kingsbury until Patrick Mahomes. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, like, and it's just, there's nothing really, there's no surefire thing.
All right. Naldo asks, I seriously believe that passing on Malik Willis will be a mistake. Is there even the slightest of chance we draft him at two?
I think there's a slight chance, but I also say none of the beat writers or anybody that is around the team right now is thinking that way, including myself. I don't think they're going that way. But then again, you know, like Ryan Matthews on staff, he thinks that's the right decision. And I get it. And I get it. And but I just don't, I don't think anyone really knows how much Brad Holmes and the rest of the front office likes him, right? We just don't know.
All right. Evan Thaddeus Thomas and David Mara asked similar questions. Was wondering if you guys think there's a chance the Lions go edge it to and like Malik so much, they trade back up from 32.
Right. So this kind of ties into a couple of questions earlier. I don't think they would do it personally, but again, if he falls to a certain point, I could see them being tempted to do it. Right. Here's the thing though. I mean, if he's on the clock, if he's on the table for New Orleans at 16,
I was going to say, like, it would have to be at 15.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you'd have like,
this is the move you'd have to make
to jump. Then. And so to jump to 15, you'd have to give up 32 and 34 probably. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause I mean, so again, if they're considering Malik at two and they decide to go with another player and then all of a sudden he's there, could they jump up? It's possible, but I just, again, I think they would take him at two if he was really that much in the mix.
All right. So the rest of the question, how high would they need to trade up to do it? Covered that. What would they have to give up to make it happen? We covered that. Is it worth it? Eric's saying no. If he ends up being an all pro quarterback, yes, then it was worth it. It would be worth it, but we don't know the answer to that question
right,
yet.
Right.
And it's tight. He was the Liberty quarterback, you know, like, mm-hmm. and a lot of people like to compare him to Lamar Jackson. It's like, but Lamar was fantastic at Louisville, at an ACC school. Like it's tough to compare the two as they were coming out of college. All right.
Yeah.
Eric Emmons asks, national sports media keeps giving us a quarterback with a 32nd pick, whereas local writers don't see it as likely. What are your thoughts? And does getting a quarterback at 32 change our 2023 draft plans?
Well, that's the thing is, I'm not buying it into it myself. I don't like the strategy. I don't think it works. If you like a guy, I understand. I'd rather, you know, see him go. I get the fact that that Ridder could develop into something, that Pickett could develop into something. You know what I mean? That Corral could, develop into something. And I know there's a lot of Sam Howell fans out there too, but that's not me. But
Howell's very Goffian in many ways.
If
I make a comparison for him.
He's, yeah. I would rather see them go in a different direction. So, answer to the latter part of that question, how does it change your plans for 32? Well, if you take a quarterback at 32 or how does it change your plans for next year? Well, you're not going to take a quarterback next year. And so now you're banking on that quarterback that fell to 32 panning out. And you really have already, you've already wasted a bullet in the chamber on your quarterback and you don't have another one now. because you can't take a quarterback in the first round and then go take a quarterback in the first round again. It doesn't work like that. The only team that's done that is the Cardinals, and that's because they changed coaches and their first quarterback was terrible. So, and so I think the Kliffberry thing, and look how that's worked out too, right? So I think it would disrupt their plans quite a bit.
All right. Bada bing, bada boom. Asks, if they don't take a quarterback at 2, 32, or 34, do you think they will draft a guy later to possibly be the back of the future? Ugh,
these backs of the future. I don't like that idea because I don't think anybody that goes beyond like your top five, right? Like if you go beyond Carson Strong, I don't know if any of them can absolutely beat out either of the two quarterbacks that are on the roster. And if you absolutely can't beat them, then I don't think they're worth the pick. So I would say no.
All right. Paps NFL asks, do you think the Lions bring in even an undrafted free agent flyer at quarterback, like maybe EJ Perry, Guy Meyers, or Cole Kelly? Maybe.
Yes. I do think that works because they can have them compete with Steven Montez for a spot on the practice squad or potentially to push Blau a little bit. But they also are set up with Montez that they don't need to do it. If they don't have to go out and try and get one of these UDFA guys. Because here's the thing. I have six quarterbacks that are kind of like that are, I think, would be an upgrade to one of the backups. And then you have a couple other guys that are draftable. And then you've got another like eight guys that are, UDFAs. So in total, that's like 16 guys. That there's only 16 quarterbacks in this draft class that should be in NFL camps. And half of them probably won't make a roster. So do you really want to go after like this small pool of players? And I think they've set themselves up where they could avoid quarterback entirely and be fine. And if they are able to convince a guy to come in and compete, then that's great. But I don't think they need to do anything at this stage.
Samson 2 on Twitch asks, would you rather draft a quarterback with one pick this year or spend four picks to move up next year and hope you pick right? Love your show, guys.
I want to hear your answer to this one. I'll go first if you want me to.
No, I'll go.
Okay.
I would rather spend four picks next year.
Me too.
Because, yeah. Like, I'm not settled on any one of these guys. I'm not crazy about any of them.
Right.
I was, and I think they should do whatever it takes to get one of them this year. But next year, yeah, deal all your picks or deal a big chunk. If the Lions get a lot closer, like if everything goes according to plan, they'll be a lot closer to being a playoff team.
Right.
And then either you deal a bunch of picks to move up in the draft to pick that quarterback, or you deal a bunch of picks to pick up, you know, some disgruntled veteran from some other team that's very good. You know, like everybody says that's going to dry up, but I don't know about that. We'll see. You know, like that we might see a quarterback carousel. Like this might be a revolving door for years and years and years, you know, like, so mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd rather wait a year.
Right. Because it looks right now that next year's class should at least have one quarterback that I think is going to be a plus NFL starter. Right. And
wait, who's that quarterback? Oh,
it could be Bryce any Young. Yeah. I mean, you have Young and then you have Stroud. I like Stroud quite a bit as well. I'm leaning Stroud a little bit more, but regardless, we'll have a whole year to debate that. But if you can go get like one of those guys, if you're like, hey, this is going to be a franchise, you know, changer. We've often talked about the fact that there are 32 franchises, but not 32 starting NFL quarterbacks, like capable, right? And so if you can get one, I'd give up four picks for that because they're so hard to find.
Sure. All right. Big Eastern Syndicate asks, if Jason Kabinda is vital to the offense, would it make sense to draft a redundant player? Who in this draft class could fill that role as either a draftee or UDFA?
Well, the most obvious one is the Michigan State kid, right? Connor Haywood.
I want him to have a chance. I want him to go somewhere else.
Here's the thing. I think they could – what they did last year with Kabinda was they tried to fill his role with like multiple players, right? And if they would have had Josh Hill last year, I don't think it would have been as detrimental to the offense if Kabinda wasn't after Kabinda got hurt. I think they're hoping that they have got that guy in Mitchell. And if they haven't got that guy in Mitchell, then maybe they can get that guy. Maybe like Connor Haywood or maybe Bellinger could kind of be that role as well, right? Because he has that H-back potential. So I do think it's important, but I think they can address it by upgrading like the tight end position and helping, you know, soften the blow if something happens again.
All right. Detroit Lions hopeful asked, do you think the Lions could wait on picking receiver like last year, just focused on best player available defensively with the first four picks?
I do. In my mock draft over at Pride of Detroit, the community mock draft that they did, I went defense with the first four picks, and we stopped at 66 because it gets a little out of control with all the, you know, having to have all the people contribute. But I went defense all four. So I absolutely am in that camp that they could find a receiver a little bit later. Round three, you're still going to be able to get a talented player, in my opinion.
Paps NFL asked, if the Lions take two wide receivers in the draft, like Randall L said, I'd imagine it would be more immediate starter and a later round prospect. Thoughts on them going for some raw upside athletes like Isaiah Weston or Tanner Connor?
Yeah, I do think, again, yeah, it would be, they'd be taking someone who they think can challenge to start this year or next, or, you know, they would expect to start next year. And then a player who is multi-talented that can do something else. Like Valus Jones is a guy I brought up before. If they took him on day three as like a backup slot, but also gadget player out of the backfield, and he's a returner, I'd understand that. And that's how I do think if they did double dip at receiver, that would be the strategy. Yeah, Valus would be my guy.
All right, chance of all right, so then he adds, chance Lions draft more of a pure slot guy like Kyler Phillips, Bo Melton, Sky Moore, or Calvin Austin, and push Amon-Ra St. Brown to play more X.
I think he would play the Z, but I get what he's saying that, like, yeah, were they, but they kind of, with Raymond in the fold, I don't think they are going to be pressed to take a slot. I would understand the strategy, but I don't think, like, as much as I like Calvin Austin, I think you'd be drafting him as like a specialty type player. I think he's the best of the slot receivers that were just mentioned there. He could be a punt returner. He can be a backup slot guy. Like, there's value to taking him, but I don't know if I would spend a third on him if I already spent like a first on someone else, or even if I didn't spend, or I'm sorry, like a higher pick on another receiver. And then at the same time, I also wouldn't want him to be the first one I'm taking, because I think they need to be targeting a bigger receiver in this draft, something that they can work towards in the future. But I mean, if they only walk out of this draft with like a Calvin Austin, I think there's a role for that type of player if he's also contributing on special teams.
All right. Jerry Steitzman asks, I've seen conflicting opinions about Pickens. Either the Lions would not have him on their board because of character concerns, or he's the type of player the Lions would love because of how he plays. Where do you land on this?
So the only real, like, and I might be missing this, but the only real character concerns I've seen on George Pickens stemmed from an article at The Athletic where Bruce Feldman was talking about, these are things that I'm hearing from different people around the league, and that are all anonymous. They're scouts, GMs, all kinds of people. And so there were three different people that all said something like that Pickens had some character issues in question. They didn't present what the character issues were, so I don't know how to speak on that. But at the same time, these are anonymous scouts giving information to the media. and not really saying anything other than, yeah, he's not on our board. And so that's a hard report to trust, right? Because a lot of times there's an agenda to giving this type of information to a reporter. So I guess what I'm getting at here, Jerry, is that I don't have a definitive answer because I don't know anything beyond what these reports, and it's hard to tell if they're true or not. The Lions will have information on him. They will have talked to him and talked to his teammates and talked to his coaches. And so they'll have a much better understanding. And if, you know, they'll know whether or not they're comfortable with him. Unfortunately for us, it's a part of the draft process that we're limited in our knowledge of.
JC Spadoni asks, how do you rank Tolbert, Pierce, and Watson, and why? You like Watson the most?
I do, because of his potential, right? He has his drops, but I think the potential's there that he would be the highest. Pierce is next for me because I think he's a bit of a steal, but Tolbert's right behind him. I think most analysts have that flipped where they have Tolbert ahead of Pierce. Tolbert also started for the Lions at the Senior Bowl, right? Like on the Lions roster. So I could understand them liking him a little bit more. For me though, there's just a little bit more that I like to Pierce's game. And he's faster. He has more agility. And I just like the type of player he is a little bit better. But I would fully understand Tolbert. All three of these guys I expect off the board. The Lions at would have to use 66 or earlier on them.
Okay, Casby asks, people talk about the fifth-year option for QBs, but isn't it almost just as important to get for wide receivers?
Well, this has been brought up recently because the stock, the rise in the wide receiver prices have gone up, right? For me, though, I think we've talked about this a couple times recently, is that I envision a flooded market of wide receivers the way that the colleges are trending with spread offenses and players switching over to wide receiver because there's more exposure. And so I'm expecting the market to kind of level off. I don't know if it will drop down to like the running back type level in the next 5 years necessarily. But I do think there's going to be enough high quality players that the prices I think will level off and maybe even decline. So I don't think you necessarily have to target a receiver because of that, but I understand the logic behind it. And there's a lot of people that take the opposite approach and believe that the wide receiver market will continue to climb. I just have a little bit of a perspective. So I don't think it's as important as like a quarterback or, like an offensive tackle or edge rusher.
HLM asks, if Hutchinson is picked by Jacksonville, how realistic is that the Lions pick Ike Ekwonu?
I don't think that's realistic. I don't think they would take an offensive tackle that would play guard for them for at least what, 2 years. It would be a misallocation of resources, in my opinion.
All right, flip over to the defensive questions. +5 or -5 asks, is there any chance Hutchinson's camp tells the Jags not to draft him?
I mean, there's a chance, but I don't think
you want to be number one pick. Yeah, you want to be the number one pick. All right. Sure. Robert Canfield asks, Trayvon Walker came into college as a defensive tackle, played mostly defensive tackle, and dropped from 290 to 275 to play more defensive end as a junior. Any chance teams might view him potentially freakish pass rushing defensive tackle prospect in the Aaron Donald mold rather than primarily edge?
I don't think that they are going to go as far as to try and keep him as an interior guy only, just because he's so much more versatile that he can play a lot of different spots. Will he play defensive tackle? I think he will at times. I also think he'll stand up at times. I think he'll have his hand in the dirt. Like, I think the value in a Trayvon Walker is that he can do so many things. You wouldn't want to just stick him at one spot. So, I don't think he doesn't have a quick enough first step to be on that Aaron Donald level. But I do think if he was labeled a defensive tackle, it would be a, people would have a completely different perspective on him.
Yeah. And I guess one of the keys too, is like Aaron Donald is Aaron Donald. Therefore they can put him all over the place. And he weighs 290 pounds just because he's right. best when he plays at 290 pounds. And
right.
it seems always like a bad coaching move to me when coaches like, no, you're going to put on weight and you're going to play this position. It's like, well, yeah, if they figure like this is the way he's going to be most effective and most efficient, well, then right. maybe. But the player needs to play at what weight like just works best for them, right. and what gets the most out of them. I don't know. I was weird when they always try to pigeonhole guys. All right, Jacob Dusher asks, if the Jaguars do go offensive tackle at number one, do the Lions shock the entire state of Michigan by going Walker at two? What would the backlash be?
First of all, I don't think it would be shocking because I projected them to take Walker in that community mock draft I was discussing earlier. I've been a they should take Walker proponent if Hutchinson's not there for a while now. And so I don't think it would be that shocking. And I think people who have been following along with the podcast or with my writing, I think would hopefully not be shocked at that too much either. What's surprising to me is that there's so many people so willing to accept that Walker could be the first overall pick, yet isn't good enough to be the second overall pick to the Lions. And like, it shocks me that he's as disrespected as he is, because I think he's a highly talented player, and there's a lot more to box than the box scores. And people, if they see the type of player that he is, and sometimes it takes seeing a player in person to really get that. But I think if people can see the type of player that he is and the potential that he has, I think they'd have a different perspective.
Well, Eric, I think it all comes down to the fact that it's what college name comes after Aiden Hutchinson. When it comes really? To this area. No, I mean, it is. And that's not like a negative thing. I would think that would mostly happen anywhere. Like, mm-hmm. but if, yes, like a guy who could go number one overall mm-hmm. went to the University of Michigan, mm-hmm. like, and then the Lions pass him up, even though he would be available to him. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's going to cause some backlash because people like the, you know, like a lot of the, I know you went to Michigan and mm-hmm. like, so, but you wouldn't be the popular opinion on this, because if you're a football fan, likes mm-hmm. the Lions, likes Michigan, you know, you see Aiden Hutchinson play and mm-hmm. like he's the leader and the catalyst of a Big mm-hmm. Ten championship team, of course you want the Lions to draft right. him if he's rated that high as a prospect. So it wouldn't be all that shocking that, you know, I don't mm-hmm. think Trayvon Walker's getting disrespected. Like mm-hmm. if Aiden Hutchinson did all this at UCLA mm-hmm. and was in like the mix for number one, I think it wouldn't be the same as it is right now, you know, like for Lions fans is what I'm saying.
For me, Hutchinson is the more complete prospect. And so I would take him.
Higher floor, lower ceiling. Get it.
I actually think he has a high ceiling too. So for me, I would take Hutchinson one, no matter. And then, but for me, I like Walker next. And, but yeah, I think there would be backlash because people, you know, like I wouldn't be happy if they passed on Hutchinson for anybody, whether it was Walker or Thibodeau, or which is, you know, a common thought out there as well. I wouldn't be happy with that, but I would it goes back to that idea that we talked about earlier, where there's probably like six guys in this group and they're going to have them stacked in a certain way. And it's possible they have Walker a little bit higher. So maybe the backlash would be pretty high, you know, but
yeah.
So, but yeah, I guess I wouldn't be stunned, but I would be disappointed. And I think most people would be too.
All right, Ryan Kohler asks, what would happen if Detroit shocked the world and drafted defensive tackle Jordan Davis at number two? I'd love it. I'd be the only guy who'd like it. I'd be the man to the Lions nail it there.
Yeah, it would be surprising. I think that would be more shocking to me if Hutchinson was off the board and then they still went and they went Davis over the rest, that would surprise me.
All right, Mr. Underhill, in your opinion, which is more important and why, a backup offensive tackle or a backup defensive tackle?
I say defensive tackle because your defensive tackles rotate and your offensive tackles don't,
yeah, right? In a perfect world, it's defensive tackle because they're going to play a lot more. But we have loads of injury problems as our Detroit Lions offensive lines traditionally. Well, so our backup offensive tackles do end up playing a lot, but I would agree backup defensive tackles.
Yes. At the same time, you need a third offensive tackle. That has been another statement we've said for a long time as well. But if you're just talking, you know, if you're not, I would say the backup tackle is going to be more significant, or defensive tackle is more significant.
Paps NFL asks, any chance the Lions double dip at defensive line, or maybe pick an interior defensive lineman that can play inside and on the edge like Leal or Logan Hall?
I do think they could be in the mix. I think Hall and DeMarvin Leal could be in the mix. If they drafted Trayvon Walker, I think it would be a little bit redundant. But if they end up with like Hutchinson or Thibodeau, and then they ended up drafting Hall because he was there, I could definitely see that. Leal, same thing. He's a little lower for me, but I could see a double dip on the defensive line.
Okay, all right. That's all right. With great sack numbers in the SEC and an insanely good RAS score, why isn't Sam Williams more highly projected? I know Ole Miss has a kind of weird defensive scheme, but had 12 and a half sacks is higher than almost all the guys projected in the first round.
So first of all, I think he's still going to go on day two. But the thing is he's not really an edge setter. And we've talked about this so many times that if you can't set the edge as an edge defender, then you're not a starter. And if you're not a starter, you don't necessarily go on day one. It's the same argument we've had with Boye Mafe, right? Mafe is a better athlete, so he's going to go higher. But I do think Williams is going to go probably like in the early parts of the third round, but he's going to be kind of like he's kind of like a Julian Aquara in that way, where he is a pass rusher only that has to develop skills in order to become a more consistent player. And those types of guys, they go, you know, and they don't go in the first round.
Dan Pask asks, I'm sorry to ask this, but after reading about Chase Young's ACL recovery timeline and Ziggy's limited actual production with us, especially when compared with the implied fragility of a dual threat quarterback, how many years do we get out of a first round edge rusher on average? Thanks, guys.
Well, I think on average, you're going to get a max out of them. Like there's of course injuries that happen. But if you're typically, you're going to get a pretty considerable amount of work out of an edge. The trick is you got to get the right one. Yeah. And
if you pick the right one, you can get 11 years, you know, or more, great production. Right? Yeah. Or more, you know, you could have Reggie White, or you could, have, you know, like
so like,
shoot. I don't know. Did you do a deep dive on the numbers?
No, not really. Like with Chase, you can't predict injuries. So like, you can't draft scared. Right. And then with like Ziggy, you were taking a talent that was unproven, but like had potential. And in I thought, you know,
and he they played, developed him.
Right. And they did.
And injuries took him down. Yeah,
exactly. And so I'm not scared of injuries at any position. And you can't, you know, like you have to be, conscious of injuries of a player's injury history. But at the same time, you can't draft saying, well, you know, I'm worried this guy's going to get hurt. Like you have to be confident in your analysis of him, and you just have to draft the player on his talent and let the injury stuff kind of work itself out.
All right. Dave asks, if we assume they're hoping Barnes grows into something long-term, can you name some additional linebackers would be a good pair with him and describe what style a linebacker would be in the 4-3/4-2-5 they seem to want to move to?
Well, the trick is there's not a real clear picture on what they want to do with Barnes, because they used him in a lot of different ways. So it's not clear if they want to use him at the mic, or if they want to use him at that kind of buck, or if they when they go to three linebacker sets, is he going to be more like an outside Sam or something like that? Like, so they don't really have a clearly defined role for Barnes right now. And so because of that, it's really hard to predict which linebacker would go with him. I think they could, like, if they think he's like a buck linebacker, like the inside linebacker that's not the Mike, they could take a Devin Lloyd who could be a Mike. Or if they think he's a Mike, they might take a N'Kobe Dean who maybe isn't going to be a Mike because of his size, right? And so I don't think they're limited, and they might not even know exactly what they want to do with Barnes. They just know they have a playmaker and they're just going to develop him and kind of see where it goes. So I think almost all linebacker options are on the table, because I don't think Barnes has settled into any one specific role. And so that gives them options.
Boone 313 asks, how likely is it that they take N'Kobe Dean if he's available at 32? Are they really that high on this linebacking core?
I can't imagine they're as high on this linebacking core as they say they are, because you've basically you've swapped out Reeves Maybin for the kid from Baltimore, Board. And then you had Jamie Collins, who you haven't replaced at all, or maybe replaced that him, his role with Jared Davis. But that shouldn't leave, neither of those guys should leave you feeling warm and fuzzy that this linebacker unit is complete here. No. So if a guy like Dean was there at 32, I would say, yes, the value is there to go get him. There have been rumors recently that Lloyd and Dean have some medical flags that have popped up that could push them so that maybe both of them are there at 32, and they might not even be the first linebackers taken because of X, Y, or Z. Again, that's information we don't have privy to. And then it's also, it's late in the season information that's coming out, and so it's hard to trust. And so, yeah, look, based on what we know, I think if he was there, he'd be worth the pick.
David Eakins says, I liked your selections in the POD community draft, but I'm a little disappointed you passed on George Pickens at 32. Be honest, you were hoping he would be there at 34.
All right, so here's what happened. I took Walker, number two. Then I took Dean at 32. Then Pickens went at 33. And then I took Devontae Wyatt at 34. So he's what David's asking is,
you took all these Georgia guys.
Yeah, I did. I went Georgia full of three picks in a row. But what David's asking is, was I taking Dean hoping Pickens would be there at 34? And actually I wasn't. I was actually anticipating Wyatt being there. Wyatt was the higher player on my board. I was actually hoping that Jacksonville would take Wyatt, because in reality, I don't think he'll be there at 32 or 34. And then I was going to take Lewis Cine, another Georgia guy, just to keep it the theme, right? But the Jacksonville took Pickens. And so I took Wyatt, because Wyatt was the highest rated player on the board for me. And so that was my strategy. I think Wyatt is a extremely talented player, and he's going to end up going in the 20s. I don't think he's going to be available with either of the Lions picks in the 30s.
Marcus asks, while working for the Rams, Holmes had a pretty good hit rate with regards to drafting safeties, yep, particularly in the later rounds. Isn't it more possible that he trusts this track record and will select a safety later, even if there's a big need?
I mean, it's possible. We thought it was a big need last year. He passed entirely, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's very possible he looks at this again and he's like, well, I'll try and find my guy. Here's the deal. There's a big difference between this class and last year's class. And in this class, I have eight guys that I think are all guys that could come in challenged to start day one. And I could even expand that out like to another like five guys that I think they could get on day three, who could challenge for important roles, like maybe as like a safety three, if they're, you know, again, if they really like what they have in Will Harris, right? So there's basically like 13 different safeties in this class that I like, and some of them they're going to be able to get later in the later round. So I do think they're going to address safety. My preference would be that they address it with one of their first five picks, or one of their top 100 picks, because I really like the value of the players that you can find in those spots. In the community mock draft, after I went Walker, Dean, and Wyatt, I ended up taking Brian Cook out of Cincinnati, and I wrote a big article on the how I weighed between Brian Cook, Nick Cross, and Kirby Joseph to figure out which guy I thought they might like best. I think all of them would be great gets at pick 66, and I wouldn't blink it if they took any of those guys, because they're all really good.
Detroit Lions double take asks, have heard a lot of scouts that love Jalen Petrie from Baylor, but he isn't ranked as high because he's a slot cornerback type and maybe the value isn't there, but he can play ball. What are your thoughts on considering him at 34? Could he be an underrated fit with Aaron Glenn?
It's possible. I have him a little lower than 34, not much lower. I still think he probably goes in the second round, but he's more in like, if they were to trade back at some point, I would take him. And that's mainly because he's safety five for me. Like, I would take Hamilton, Daxon Hill, Lewis Cine, and probably Brisker all ahead of Petrie. I know their games better. I understand their games better. But Petrie's, he's a good player. Don't get me wrong. He's in that same kind of tier. He's just at the bottom of that tier two in the safety group for me.
Daniel Reese, do you like Kirby Joseph as a good third round option if the Lions don't go safety in the first two rounds? And how would he fit the defensive backfield?
Right. So Cook, Cross, and Joseph, they're all in that third tier of safeties that I really like. And they all kind of fit in a similar way. Cook is a little bit more positionally flexible. He's a big hitter and he rarely misses as a tackler, which is why I took him in the community mock draft. Cross, it has incredible range. He can play single high. He can play up in the box. He's a better tackler than Joseph. Joseph needs to work on his tackling, but he is the best playmaker of the trio. He's comfortable in single high. He can play a little bit of slot, a little bit in the box, but he's ideally a single high, and that's where he would live most of the time. And that's a good role for him. I think he can be an excellent split zone safety that can drop to single high and also drop down, but he's got to really work on his tackling. So I have him third in that third tier behind Cook and Cross because the tackling just isn't there. Cook just doesn't miss. Cook just is a big hitter that just doesn't miss. Cross is efficient. But Joseph, he settles too much and he'll just get run over in the NFL if he doesn't learn to be more proficient as a tackler. But like I said, best ball hawk amongst that group for sure.
Don asked, the safety class appears deep this year. How many players at that position do you think the Lions will draft? And how many would you draft? I think there are several that would fit the MCDC mentality.
Yeah, again, there's eight guys that I think we've challenged to start, but if you're looking at drafting guys that are also able to fill other roles, then there's a nice handful of those guys as well. Tyson Anderson, Juwanna Thomas, those guys are both like matchup defensive backs that can play at the robber level, who can kind of play in between that linebacker and kind of slot safety defensive back type role, kind of like what you have with Will Harris, right? Or at least what they're projecting Will Harris to be. There's also like JT Woods and Verone McKinley, who I think are also split zone guys, but need more development. Even Delarian Turner Yell, same thing. He's a split zone guy. He's more in the box, like a Deshaun Elliott type of guy, in my opinion. And so I think there's these types of guys that you could also like get for specific types roles, because they're also really good special teamers, like almost all of them, like Anderson, Thomas, Turner, Yell, they're all day one starters on special teams. And you could, they're kind of like more developed versions of with a higher ceiling than like a CJ Moore. That's essentially, and that's a draftable player in my mind.
All right. draft general questions, the real BRD88. I keep seeing Hutchinson, Dean, Pickens as our first three picks. I do not see a better first three picks than that. Three starters right out the gate in positions we need upgraded. Who would be your first three picks?
Look, it's really hard to tell because of how the boards will fall. And I think there's a nice collection of talent between like that 20 and 40 range. Like there's a whole slew of guys that you would be happy with. And so depending on who goes between 20 and 32 or 33, you're still going to have talented guys that are there, and you're going to get two of them, which is even better. Right. So I don't know if I have an ideal. I mean, in the community mock draft, I went with Dean and then I went with the defensive tackle, but my plan was, or my hope was, is that it probably would have been seen. I think seen is a really talented player. So yeah, I mean, like, I think you can wait on wide receiver. So if they went with Hutchinson, Dean, and Seen, that'd be pretty good for me.
You know, it's funny. It's not funny, but all right, these three picks, they really, and you're right, they can go any one of a myriad of ways with these three picks. But in general, it seems it'll be edge rusher at that number two pick with the outside shot that it'll be Malik Willis, right? But otherwise, it's that edge rusher with that first pick. And then the next two picks is any combination of defensive tackle, safety, corner, wide receiver, and I guess that would be it.
Linebacker?
Linebacker. There you go. Sorry, that's all right. Sorry, not linebacker ahead of corner, but still that group. And you know what's going to end up. So that's, that's a lot. But you know what? That's not what's going to happen. They're going to take somebody else in those three that will infuriate everybody. So why do they do that? You know, they're going to take like a tight end at 34 or whatever, and it's going to drive everybody insane. And that's just what happens. Cause like, well, he was the best player on our board and we could use a second tight end and blah, blah, blah.
I think
we're not going to sign Hockenson to an extension or whatever. Like,
I think that's coming, but still, yeah, I could see them take like a McDuffie and be like, he's their best player.
Will go nuts.
Yeah.
Because the real BRD88, he's got Hutchinson, Dean, Pickens. Yeah, that'd work fine for me. And then your three would work fine with me. There's a ton of these things that would work fine with me, but that's not what we're going to get, on Sunday. We're sitting there on Sunday going, why did they do that?
I think if they took a defensive tackle, people would be pretty riled up because they just took two defensive tackles on DJ Lee. It wouldn't bother me at all.
They need defense.
Yeah. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they went tight end before they went receiver, and then used more two tight ends. That would not surprise me at all. You remember, folks, your head coach was a former tight end.
Yeah. Kyler Kriegel, who was one player on day one, day two, and day three. You don't want the Lions to take. Gosh.
Yeah, that's
could good. Be for any reason.
Oh, I did not prep this, so I'm going to glance through
the
board real fast. I've got an
answer.
Okay, go.
Oh, I don't have day one. I didn't prep this either. Day two, Kenneth Walker III. I do not want them taking Kenneth Walker III.
Really? On day two. Oh, is that because you want to go somewhere?
Yeah, I want him to succeed.
Oh, okay. He said any reason.
Any reason.
He said any reason.
And then day three, I guess it would be Cameron Hayward for the same reason. Day one, I don't. Maybe it would be one of the quarterbacks. Maybe it would be Malik Willis. I really don't. I wouldn't mind them taking Sauce Gardner, but I don't want them taking Sauce Gardner at two. Right. So that's one of those things.
Okay, good.
Other than that, I'm not too down on like a lot of these guys that are sitting at the top of the draft.
Day two. I do not like Kair Elam, Florida corner. Everybody likes him.
Oh, and with Tease Tabor looming as our second-round Florida corner.
Like they're
the background.
He ran sub 4.4. He's got good skills.
Faster than Tease.
He's got a high ceiling. I don't like how he played out his last season. It still sits poorly with me. Day one. I don't want them to take like Boy Mafe. On day one. I don't, maybe that's a reach because he's not definitely going there. I don't want them to take Kenyon Green, who's the guard out of Texas A&M. I wouldn't want him in the first at pick 32 either. So don't give me an offense. I don't want an offensive lineman on day one at all. Like, just I don't want it.
Offensive. Yeah, no, that's the best. I think that's the best one. One play, like it would be it would be Neal. Like, don't give me Ekwonu, Neal, or Charles Cross. Don't give me any of the, one of those guys on day one. That's, I bet that's the safest bet.
Yeah, that's so. I don't know. That's where I'm at, and I don't know if I have a. Yeah, I don't like I said, I don't. I'm not
day three is such fan.
Yeah, it's such a hard one.
It's a toss up. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. It's like basically it's what guy do you hate? Yeah. Which is not.
Or one guy that you want to see succeed. And he can't be a Lion.
I don't know. I it's hard for me because I always try and look at like who are the guys that I want. I don't often look at the guys that I don't want, but that's a good exercise to have. Like, who should you take off your board? I just don't have a good answer at this time for day three.
Drama beats. Who's the biggest faller in the draft?
Well, a lot of it's going to depend on.
It's going to be one of the quarterbacks.
I think it's going to depend on things we don't know. Right. Like if Pickens, if Pickens is hurt. Or if Pickens' his character hurts his stock, then he could drop. If the linebackers have medical things, then they could drop. Like, I think that the guy who's probably going to fall the most is Damone Clark because he has back surgery. It's a second round pick who you're going to get on, probably going to get on day three, right? Like, yeah, that's a huge fall.
Guys.
Yeah. So it'll be someone we don't expect, and it'll be because of a character or medical issue that we don't know anything about. It won't be because you get caught with a gas mask a few hours before the draft.
It's legal in a lot of states now.
Yeah. What a fascinating day that was.
It was. And look at what it ended like. And that's when, you know, the Lions should have raced up to the podium. They'd be like, we'll take him because he ended up being a really good player. You know, like one of those things, you know. And yeah, I guess it's character-rich, but once again, now it's legal in how many states? But all right. Anyhow, Miko Scott, Christian Fink, and Vishal Prasad asked similar questions. What is the one position we as fans think the Lions need to address that will likely go unaddressed? Safety.
Because it didn't happen last year, right?
So I feel it won't happen again.
Oh, man.
They have to address wide receiver. I think everybody knows that. They have to. Maybe they don't. I mean, they have no choice but to address edge rusher, especially with the second pick, you know.
I mean, if they don't take an edge rusher.
Linebacker. Linebacker or safety.
Yeah, yeah.
They'll take an edge rusher. They have no.
Yeah, I think
their options. They'd have to trade.
It's a deep edge class, too. So even if they like.
Yeah, they would.
I still think. Yeah. But yeah, it's. Look, gosh. I hate to say safety, but they did it last year. So that'd be my guess again.
Paps NFL, what players in the upcoming draft do you see as quote unquote Dan Campbell guys, since it seems this franchise prioritizes culture? Do we really know that? Do we really know if they prioritize culture?
I think so. I mean, they.
It's not just something they say.
No, the trick is it's trying to understand what culture is, right? Because they're changing the culture and they're looking for players that will fit into their team, right? Who can be a collaborative player and not someone that's going to like, you know, ruffle feathers, right? And so people like, for example, with Thibodeau, people look at his personality and say, hey, maybe he's not a guy that is going to fit because he has a different personality. But at the same time, if he has certain characteristics that Campbell likes, then they're not going to dismiss him because of other characteristics. Like, they want everyone to be individual. They're just looking for certain things, and it might be different for each guy, but when they talk about culture, I don't think it's a blanket like statement. Like with the Patriots, when they talk about culture, it's like, you have to buy in, you have to do this, right? I don't, it's a different mentality, right? You have to love football. That's how Dan Campbell has described it. We want players who love football. And so how do you quantify that? Like, how do you, like, they get a lot of that feel by doing interviews with these players. And we don't get that. We can watch interviews, but like, it's not the, it's, you know, edited versions and whatnot. Like, we don't, so it's really hard to say, but like, there's certain players that like, look, if Hutchinson is there, he eats, breathes, sleeps football. Like he would be a perfect character fit. But then there's other guys that it's hard for us to really know because we're not in the room for these. Like, I know people are on Thibodeau and saying that he's not, no way because of his, you know, interviews that he does and his kind of, he rubs people the wrong way with some of the things he says.
Kind of a smokescreen.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, if he loves football and they get that, they get the feeling that he loves football, well, they're going to let him be his own personality and they're going to, and that's so, yeah, my point, I guess, is that it's hard for us to say, and I think that our version of what we think is culture is probably different than what the Lions feel. And so it's hard to pick out a lot of guys here.
Neil Ebner asks, who is the guy with the weird name the Lions are most likely to draft? I'm calling for Ioma Uwazirike. edge from Iowa State. I think we have his defensive tackle. Say so. It's huge. It's the Nigerian names that get me. I really struggle with those last names, you know. And that's it. And coming from a culture of last names that are also hard to pronounce, like I do feel for them, and I feel sorry whenever I get them wrong, you know, because often people have to get their names wrong all the time.
Uwazirike is, I believe, how
it's Uwazirike.
Uwazirike. Yeah, he's from Detroit too. So like, I could definitely see them take him. He's from Detroit. He's position versatile. He's a guy who I think is one of those defensive tackles that, you know, maybe he's not going to challenge the start, but he has so many little like characteristics that fit what they're looking for: height, length, wingspan. He has good, decent speed. He can play at a lot of different spots. And so, let me just get his name right one more time. Uwazirike. I think that would be one of the more challenging ones. I mean, look, they got a whole
Otito bunch of Ogbonaya. That'd be another hard one. There's tons of them.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, look, there's basic names that we've gotten wrong.
Oh, I mean, because we're morons. We're going to get some of them wrong.
We just need to get the, once the player gets drafted, we just need to get the pronunciation guide and we'll do our best.
Mm-hmm. Matt Lane asks, so there's an easy one to pronounce. Do you get excited each year when the Lions are on the clock and do you take satisfaction out of nailing some of their picks in your scouting articles? Well, Eric certainly does.
Oh, yeah. Look, for the amount of work that you put into this, I mean, it's hundreds of hours. You know what I mean? Like, to develop the draft board that's to make it Lions friendly for the people on Patreon, for our subscribers on Patreon, that alone takes an insane amount of hours. But then to like study these players constantly, you're doing it every day. Like, it's hundreds and hundreds of hours. So when you have a good feel for the team and you have a good feel for the class and you're able to marry them together and come up with something, it is very rewarding. As any, you know, time you find, you know, any success in your profession. But yes, I do like to see, because it tells me that I'm on the right track. Right. And so it can be very rewarding.
I do not get excited when the Lions are on the clock because I know that's when they're going to commercial. They won't this year for number two. Like, they will not go to commercial during the number two pick. But during the rest of the Lions picks, they always go to commercial. Always right. Go to commercial. Right. Either during that 10 minutes or right after the pick is in, we'll hear who it is, and then they'll go to commercial. They won't even show the clips of that guy. All right, that's my complaint. Part of the curse. All right. Ted Scroback asks, what is your mental state at this point in the process?
Yeah, I'm pretty gone. at this point. I am trying to wrap up articles ahead of the draft, and I am waking up at 6 a.m. For the kids. And then I'm staying up till midnight or 1 a.m. Writing or working on the board. And then I'm back up at 6, and I've basically been on that schedule for the last few weeks. It's not always as intense as this, but like right now, trying to get the board completed and trying to get the articles done in a timely fashion ahead. It's a lot of work. And then you're trying to maintain your life on top of that. It's very time consuming. So by the time the draft arrives, I'm usually pretty exhausted, which is hard, because then you have 8 picks that you have to cover and like write multiple articles on. And so, by the time the draft is over, it's even worse. But I'm definitely feeling it right now, because we're in that home stretch.
I mean, you threw in the kids and life and stuff like that. Oh, but yeah. there was a time, Eric, and I remember this when I was first introduced to you, and you had these soirees at your home.
Yeah.
And it was at your home, so there were many people there that would be arguably overserved, you know. And me, like, I was never overserved, because I'd always eat too much. I would be too full because of all the food Laura would make.
Yeah.
You know, there's all this. But at the end of it, it's, you would be in the same mental, you would be in that exhausted mental state. Even with all this nonsense going on around you, you were still drilled into that television. And that's when you had the boards. Yeah. And like, you know, you're not that different now than you were back then.
No, I'm just digitized. Although
the scenario is totally different.
Yeah, but like, boys, I mean, I used to, for those who, you know, are looking for a living, we used to like make business size cards of every player, and then we'd Velcro them, and then we'd put them up on boards, and we'd have the boards on our door wall, and we'd have the player so you could physically move the piece. Oh, that was fun. Those were a lot of fun.
Well, one day.
Well, you know what, though?
Left gets you a smart TV, and you don't have to have that board anymore.
We talked about that at one point, right? But now that it's all done on the Excel boards and stuff, oh, my gosh, those are – my life is portable. I can take it
everywhere. Yeah, that's true. You can take it anywhere.
That's awesome. So,
all right. 3 questions. Let's push our way through them. David Webster. Right. Favorable strength of schedule, 7 games with first-year coaches. How do we not fall into 7 or 8 wins? Because of the curse. Also, yeah. Would you agree that the judgment of this regime really starts after the bye next season?
Okay, look.
I wouldn't say after the bye. I can't give them that much time at the beginning of the year. We can give them all that time this year. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But they have to start hitting the ground running in 2023.
I think they could hit 7 or 8 wins.
You do. I don't think they can. How are they better? How is this team better?
Well, they're going to get 8 more players.
All right. Well, then we'll talk about that after the 8 more players.
But I think that you have all of the player progression that you saw from last year.
Yeah, no, which is good.
So you see these guys that are developing and that they're taking these next steps. And so like at the beginning of last year, they didn't have a wide receiver. Now they have a very good wide receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown, and then a couple others that they've added then. So they're better at receiver. You know what I mean? Like their offensive line will hopefully be intact and not injured. Like, you know, 'cause you're missing Ragnow for most of the season. So I do think they're just being healthy and the development that you saw, they're a better team now than they were a year ago. And now you add 8 more players and some of your DFAs. And I think they're at a spot where they can take a step to 7 or 8 wins.
So are you in line with David saying that the judgment of this regime really starts after the bye next season, 2023?
I think it's no. I still think
start earlier than that.
I still think that they've got 2 drafts And then there it's the judgment starts like that season. So the beginning of 2023.
They kind of have they have to hit the ground running. None of this slow start. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
you know,
especially like, if they win 7 or 8 games, then they've got to go into their yeah. expectations are going to be higher too.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. All right. Mountain biker. All we hear about is draft, which is great. But what about why this rebuild is different? Are there any indications that you're seeing that make you believe this staff and team is being built for greatness, not just for flirting with being a playoff contender?
Well, that's a million-dollar question, and we're only one offseason. We're halfway through the second offseason here. But I don't think we are in a position where we can say that it's definitively on its way to greatness. I think it's too early. And I think the theme that we've had here is that we need at least one more year from now before we're going to be able to really say, is this the right path or is this not? So I still think it's a little too early for that to really make any declarations.
Yeah. Because if we had to be 100% honest with Mountain Biker, like, this staff and team as of this second is not being built for greatness. They're signing these guys to 1 year free agent contract. Yeah,
like, they're still building.
They're not trying to do that. But at the same time, they're not signing ex New England Patriots for 5 year, $90 million contracts, which is a positive thing too.
Yes.
So, but yeah, like we don't know. We don't know if this is being built for greatness, but the one thing there is something different about it because it's not all this. They're trying to build. They're at least trying to build something instead of just slapping something together. All right, Tony. Oh, I don't know.
Oh. I'm sorry. FYI, while we were talking today, I just happened to see it on my phone. The Lions did exercise the TJ Hockenson contract.
Oh well, there's no surprise there.
Yeah, we knew it was coming, right?
Yeah, they would have him for 5 years. That's one thing that sits in the back of my mind, that especially with Dan Campbell, maybe he doesn't like Hockenson. Maybe he's going to be gone after 5 years. Who knows? Does he? You would think he'd talk about him like crazy, and he doesn't.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, because he's a tight end, right?
Right. And he is a good tight end, seemingly one of the better tight ends in the NFL, but. I don't know. Campbell doesn't fawn all over. Maybe is it because he's jealous that like he was a better tight end than he was? Like he could be crazy about like all these tight ends that were about as good as he was when he played. I don't know. It's something we got to watch.
I think a contract extension is coming down the pipes for Hockenson. So and then you're going to hear him gush. Like I think it's going to be like, they're just setting themselves up for it. I think they're trying to work on something, but I also think they don't want to overpay. So, I think he will get more love this offseason. Now I'm going to be paying attention. Now I'm going to be paying attention to it.
Because isn't it coming down the pike? It's not coming down the pipes. This is one of those things right now that we have Google. When you were a kid, it's coming down the pipes.
Yeah, I'm sure pipe made a lot more sense to me. All right, we have one more.
Yeah, Tony, right. I don't know if this applies for the draft or later in the offseason, but does Julian Aquara maybe address their off-the-ball linebacker depth? I think you said in the past that he may be able to slide at that position.
Yeah, in the previous scheme, I thought that was a potential. I don't think that's as much of an option. When they're just rolling with two off the ball linebackers. Now, if there's situations where they go to like a 4-3, I could see him playing an outside linebacker, like a Sam. I could see him doing that this year. Right. But like, as far as one of the staple two down or, you know, the two inside linebacker things that they, when they're in their 4-2, that base, I don't think he would be in contention for that, but I do think there are going to be situations where they may want to stack edge rushers. And so if they have like four down linemen and they have that edge, they may stack Julian over the top of that edge so that they can almost have like two edge rushers coming off the one side. I think that is something they could do right now.
Merriam-Webster says, you may be more of an Oxford English man, but what to know? The original phrase down the pike means, quote, in the course of events or more recently in the future. Pike here is short for turnpike, and the phrase refers metaphorically to something coming further along the road. Recently has been mistaken as down the pipe, as turnpikes are relatively rare, and the phrase in the pipeline has a similar meaning in referring to things to come. So there you go. There's our lesson of the day.
I'm not
but one of those things, you know, if I hadn't read it, I would have probably thought it was down the pipe. 410 ratings. We did get a new rating.
Oh, nice.
From Charlie Tate. Is that new, or is that, do we know about that later? Yeah, that's a new one.
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Thank you, Charlie. Thanks, Charlie. Thanks everybody out there for listening, you know, who's not writing reviews. Like that. Thank you to all of them too for listening.
And to the Patreon subscribers, we've gotten some more of those as well. I am almost finalized with the board. I'm working on that. I'm going to, when we're done with this podcast, I'm going to go finish an article, and then I'm going to go try and finish the board or get close to finishing a board. Ideally, you'll have it either close to when you're done listening to this, or maybe even before. That would be ideal.
All right. That's all we got. You're not going to hear from us, the two of us together, until well after the dust settles on the draft. Yeah. You're going to be able to hear Eric in a lot of places, I'm sure, over the next few days.
Probably.
So probably. Keep an eye out for him, or an ear out for him, or whatever. Or a pike out for him. All right. That's it. That's all we got for today. So until next time, let's go Lions.